This is the Empower Podcast, released December 8th, 2019. Episode 470. Just Add Salt.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
What's up, nerd?
Not much, nerd. How you doing?
All right. Busy, busy. It's coming towards Christmas. I hate how everything sort of just
Just piles in, and then you always go on holiday too, so you're like ready to bounce out of town.
Well, I'm in holiday in January, so
I just mean like you go as a holiday, like the actual like Christmas holiday, and then it's and then you bounce out of town, so it's you've got like a solid couple of weeks there where it's like you got to get everything done beforehand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I thought about like doing a couple of other, like arranging a couple of other site tour videos, but I went, oh, it's bloody, you know, what is it? Oh, the 6th of December now.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, no, by the time I organize those, people are like companies are shutting down and people are going on holidays.
Right.
Bugger it.
Well,
it's a wonder how the world still functions, you know. Like
well, some of us do a little, you know, but the U.S. doesn't really take many holidays. So.
Right. Okay.
But I mean, it's tough, right? I mean, with vacations and things like that.
Yeah. Well, here, like companies start shutting down like the mid-December, you know, like towards Christmas. Oh, yeah. You know, people start taking holidays and stuff. So if you do want to, you know, like go to a company and like interview people and stuff like that, it's, you know, it's highly likely that they're on holidays.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of companies that don't come back until like mid-January, something like that. So it's like some companies, it's almost a month really that they're effectively winded down. Might have a skeleton crew, but
I wonder about that too, because last year you know, was my first holiday of my consulting life, and my January completely, everything dried up. I don't know if I talked about it on the show, but I had nothing to do. I mean, like I was really freaking out, and I'm sure some of it is tied to like, well, you know, like I had like one project ending, and then it was like everyone was on vacation or holiday, and they're, you know, like you can't get stuff started at that point. And so this year I have a plan, which means it's almost guaranteed I will be busier than hell, but you know, like actually like a product that I'll work on for myself. And then,
oh, okay. So it's your own product, so you're not reliant on client products.
You're not even. Yeah, I mean, just from psychologically, you know, I'm just, it's, you know, like I don't want to be like sitting there twiddling my thumbs, being like, what do I do? What do I do?
Right.
And I just to have something to do. It's like, you know, psychologically pretty important for me to be like, oh no. This is the project time that I'm working on it. So
you do realize that you don't have to work on projects. You don't have to do electronics. Yeah, there's more to life than that.
Yeah, but I mean, when my income is dependent upon it, you know, I just get nervous, Dave. You know, I'm just kind of a worrier. So.
Yeah, but income's not coming from your own product
that's
working on.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah, I guess I could go home and relax and whatever, but I don't know.
Yeah.
You never know what happens.
Well, true. The interesting thing about your own products is that, yeah, like, you know, you don't earn any income until that product's finished and shipping.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and even, you know, so you like can sink like a year's worth of, you know, labor into something like, you know, into a decent project and nothing to show for it.
I would normally agree with you, but the thing that I'm planning on working on is going to be a not necessarily like a product, but it's like a reference design that I'm going to be working on. And then I can use that as marketing and, you know, maybe make some.
Right, so guaranteed zero income.
Yeah, pretty much. But no, but I mean, reusable. So like, that's kind of the weird thing too. Like if I have a client that's like, hey, can you make this thing for me? It's like, yeah, sure, of course. And I design the whole thing for them and whatever. And I can't reuse that work again, pretty much. You know, I can't, at least not in practice. And so if I have a reference design, though, that not only helps bring people to me, but then also I can use that as the basis for future, you know, products and stuff like that. So
sure.
I'm just talking around, and you're totally right. I'm not going to make any money from this. I'm just trying to just justify it to my own brain here, Dave.
That's fine. Whatever gets you through the night.
Exactly. Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. What would I do if I wasn't working on electronics?
Do you have any other hobbies?
I was thinking about that lately. I have not been playing the piano. I play the piano, but I haven't done it in a couple months now. It's So, do you have other hobbies?
Of course I do.
What are you got?
I can working go out? Canyoning.
Oh, yeah, okay. No, when's the last time you did that?
I can go outdoors. March, I think.
So you basically have a hobby like I have a hobby in that way, yeah.
Yeah,
you
well, go canyons, mine is a, I plunk well, on keys. That one there's a seasonal hobby.
Oh, true. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's got, you know, I've got a family as well, you know. You
sure,
go out
sure.
with the family and
Dave,
play.
I'm not,
the kids.
Not throwing shade. Yeah.
Yep. In fact, that takes up most of my time, you know.
Totally.
Most of my spare time is, yeah. Yeah, it's so much so that, you know, I'm trying to organize it. I want to organize a canyoning trip at the moment because it's just term summer, of course, here. Winter over there for you weirdos.
Yep.
And because it's a summer sport. So I thought, oh, yeah, look, I'm going to organize a canyon trip with some friends. And it's like, well, I'm thinking about, well, when the hell can I do it? You know, like every Saturday is like,
oh, yeah.
is like booked up. Yeah. You know, you got kids sports and you got other family, you know, family commitments and stuff.
Sure.
It's like, well, I'll do a night canyoning trip. That'll be, you know.
Yeah,
seriously, I'll just go at night.
It, yeah.
You know, yeah. Yep.
That's great.
So that's the only time we can, you know, that everyone's sort of available. You know, everyone's finished work and nobody has any commitments on the, you know, they've all got commitments on the weekend and stuff like that. So, yeah, heck, let's do a night trip, I think.
I feel the pull of it. I mean, obviously I'm not in the same scenario of you, but I see my friends also, you know, like they got kids and, oh, yeah, their hobby projects fall off, you know, the other projects fall off. It's just work and then family. Which is great. I mean, the family part's great. But it's interesting, like being like having a list of all these things I want to design. It's like, better hurry up there, Chris. I do have a new project that I am going to be working on. I don't know if you saw my tweet, but I bought the boat anchor, Dave. I mentioned it 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I didn't see that you actually
I pulled the trigger.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So I got a HP 8753D. It was built before I was in high school. I still paid thousands of dollars for it.
Where is the photo? Where's the photo or it didn't happen?
Oh, it's on Twitter. I will definitely share it in the show notes as well.
Oh, okay. It's got a stupid Instagram link or something, has it? It's probably why it didn't automatically show up. No,
I don't do Instagram anymore.
Okay. No, I didn't see a photo of a vintage scope pop up from you.
A V&A, not a scope, but.
Oh, well, yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
no.
And then what I've quickly learned is that I need to buy a bunch of other stuff too, of course. You know, got to buy a cow kit and got to buy converters and cables and, this is not a cheap hobby, so.
You're really into this RF stuff, aren't you?
Well, it's, you know, like, so I gave a talk about it again, and I think I mentioned it last week too, but it's like having the piece of test equipment really, really opens, whereas it was all theoretical and like hard to grasp, like having hands-on with the test equipment and like seeing what happens as you change things and, you know, modify things, something about that, I don't know, it just really...
Sure.
Really changes your perspective on things. And I realize it's like a really expensive piece of gear versus, you know, but you don't have to get the most expensive gear. I just got it more expensive because of the frequency range I wanted to play in. And, but just being able to like understand it because of that, you know, I've talked about the SDRs in the past and how like seeing the spectrum come in and, you know, seeing waterfall plots and things like that. It's just in terms of like intuitive grasp of like how, and like mental models that you build, I can't believe how much that matters. And I wish it would have been part of my education sooner. Yeah,
definitely. You're going to have to swap out that 3.5-inch floppy for one of those new USB.
No way, man. I'm gonna have a because it's vintage, you know, like some floppy drives.
So you're actually going to get a USB 3.5-inch drive for your computer and then just get some old disks and copy over the bitmap file, because none of this PNG rubbish didn't
That's
exist
right.
when
I'll be like in Hackers when they're like, you know, passing discs back and forth between
right.
them.
Yeah. They're doing the hacking battle, and all they had was the tools that fits on one floppy
disk.
That's right.
They're like holding it up to the camera and stuff. Oh man.
Yep.
Classic movie. Love it.
Crash Override.
Yeah, man.
Is the character. Yeah. Anyway, love it.
Yeah.
Angelina Jolie is a hacker. Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So this thing comes in, I think, next Monday, and I'll get to start playing around with it.
Oh, you haven't even got it yet.
No.
Photos from the eBay ad, is it?
That's right. Yep.
Right. Got it.
Yeah.
Did you buy it from a dealer?
Yes, I did. Yep.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. 90-day warranty and that whole thing. So.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah. I was a little nervous about it. I mean, even though I know that, like, it's going to be fine. You know, like this is, I was thinking about it. Like this is actually the first time I've bought serious test gear in like ever, maybe since my first Rigolscope, which you could say is like not, you know, that serious of test gear.
It's not you know? High end. Yeah. Yeah. It's not in the $1,000 category.
Yeah.
It's
I don't think I've paid
$1,000
for test gear. Now I have been very, very lucky. You know, I worked at Keithley. I got to like repair and take home stuff. And then we've been very lucky that people have donated stuff to us. You obviously more than me, but I still get some stuff and it's been very, very useful and nice. But yeah, I've never done an outlay like this. I mean, you've done this for years, I'm guessing, right? I mean, not recently, but.
Not personally, like I can't remember the last time I paid four digits for a bit of test gear. I'm almost in the same camp, really.
Oh, really? Okay. That's interesting.
For work, obviously. You know,
sure. Yeah. And that's the thing. Yeah. And so I think about like Shariar, you know, like he buys a lot of broken stuff and fixes it, but I think it's still in that category. I think it's just this like upper echelon.
I think some of the stuff he buys broken is thousands of dollars broken.
Yeah, right.
It's like, don't think he's getting these for, you know, don't think he's getting a $50,000 bit of kit for $100 broken.
Right,
no,
right,
they
exactly.
I search for these on eBay myself so I can do repair videos. So I can tell you they're thousands of dollars for a broken one.
Yeah.
So it's like, so unless he's getting it some other, you know, auction, some other auction place, which in the US is possible, like, you know, there's tons of auction places in the US and you can get really good gear. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you were following along on the forum, you probably could have got a V&A for cheaper, perhaps, at an auction, you know, because closing down there. But it's, you know, harder and you've got to arrange the shipping and you've got to, not verified and it's, of course.
Yeah, I think that is.
So yeah, I've
never done, and, you know, so all of our listeners out there who are doing this, like, you know, bravo to you. I mean, like, there are some people that are, like, working on things that they need high-end gear. And I think that's the other thing, too, is, like, for a long time, I didn't really need the high, it's arguable I don't need this now, but, like, the higher-end gear, like, you know, it's just, it's good to wait until you actually need it, you know? I always talk about, like, I'm glad that the first guitar I ever bought was a piece of crap, because then when I got a better guitar, I really appreciated it.
I never
went to, like, the super high-end guitar, but I sure as hell did not need it. But some people start with, like, you know, a $5,000 Les Paul.
I don't understand.
And then they get frustrated
that.
When it sounds bad, and the reason it sounds bad is because you're bad.
They suck.
You know?
Yeah.
Everybody starts bad, you know? And it's better to start with the piece of crap, I think.
Yep. Totally agree. That's why I've always done my, like, review video. Often my review videos are based on, or shootouts are based on a price point. You know,
I do like that.
Best multimeter for $50 or $100 bucks. Here's the set of how to set up a lab for, you know, $300 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, because it's like there's no need to spend, you know, oodles of money.
Right.
For stuff like that.
Well, and it all adds up too. Like thinking about, like, so like the cow kit that I'm getting for this is like a used cow kit and it's still a few hundred bucks.
$400
$400 or so. And that's used.
I've seen them.
I saw one on eBay that was like a really high end calibrated one is $1,800. And it's holy crap.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, and I was thinking about, that's why they always come in wooden boxes.
Because of course.
If they just showed up in a baggie, you know, if they showed up in like a baggie
that's
and like,
no,
and like
it doesn't
bubble
mean
wrap.
Steal confidence, not.
No, just you need value. You need some kind of like indicator of value. And it's a nicely polished wooden box with the nice foam cutouts inside and open it up like the Ark of the Covenant.
I was just looking like a couple of weeks back at standard capacitors because I've got one here and I was just looking for how much they go for on eBay now. And it's like one standard capacitor that's literally 60 years old, right?
Wow.
60-year-old capacitor they sell for like, you know, $50-$100 a pop, and the and the whole kit in the wooden box is thousands of dollars.
Wow.
You know, for these 60-year-old capacitors, 50-60-year-old capacitors.
And that would be used on like a LCR meter or something, or what would you use
they're
it for?
They're a standard they're a transfer standard for LCR meter calibration and yeah. And, but they're 50 years old and they're still thousands of dollars, you know.
Yeah.
It's nuts. Anyway, test gear.
Yeah.
It's a sickness.
It is.
You should join the test gear anonymous thread on the EV blog forum. It's like 500 pages long or something, and all they do is talk about their addiction to test gear.
Hello, my name is Chris, and I have a problem.
And I have a new VNA. It's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Boy. You know, there's actually someone had turned me on to a mailing list for HP, just like old HP gear. And so you'll just get, so it's HP Agilent Keysight Equipment at groups.io. I'll link that as well. But it's kind of cool. It's like you see like a bunch of people that are trying to repair stuff, and it's usually pretty pretty out there. You know, it's
out there in what way?
Out there in that, like, it's like, oh, well, hey, you know, the capacitor 302 in my HP 1234
is very specific.
Broken.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, but like, you know, there's enough people that are just kind of lurking on there that are like, oh, well, I have an HP 1234. I can at least go measure it for you or something similar. Yeah. And it's just very disparate. You know, it's not enough where it's like, oh, this is just the 8753 owners or whatever, but this is just a lot of it's pretty intense. So, and it's, you know, a couple emails a day. Interesting to see what comes through.
I'll link it's an email list.
Yeah, it's an email list. Yeah. Yeah. Do you know? I remember you've talked about Psi.electronics.australia in the past, right, or something like that.
So there's Psi Electronics Design and there's Oz Electronics. There are Usenet groups, and they're not email lists. They're Usenet groups, which is different. Whereas Yahoo groups, I founded and ran the Oz Electronics Yahoo group. So that was a thing, but it eventually died out when you know, because Yahoo groups were huge at the time, and I was on a canyon in Yahoo.
Yeah,
you know,
that makes sense.
And you'd get daily, you know, and it was a great way to operate because you would read everyone's response. It'd come in as an email,
right,
then you'd just simply reply to it.
Right.
And you know, I was the number one poster on the Oz Canyon in forum. You know.
Yeah. Yeah,
10,000 posts.
And I kind of like that idea. Like, you know, in the age of Slack and Discord and all these goddamn chat clients that are out there, I just can't keep track of any of them.
Right.
And I'm always watching my email, you know, and it's just
of course. Yeah.
You know, thinking about this kind of thing.
Yep.
Sometimes there's garbage that comes through. You know, there's people that are flaming all the usual internet-y type stuff. But at the same time, like, I do not want to be on chat client. Like, we've thought about it. Mm. We thought about, oh, should we have, like, an Amp Hour Slack or Discord or something like that? Or we did have a IRC at one point. And it's just like, man, you can't keep track of it. You know?
We would have to go over there and hang out on that. Yeah. And I have no other reason to be out over there and hang out,
right,
you know, apart from that. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah, IRC will be around past, you know, it's in the cockroaches and Twinkies category of you know, the internet. It's going to be around forever, but like, I just can't, I can't do it. Like, I'm either all in or I can't switch my attention like that.
I'm on a couple of forums, like as in the original BBS type forums, of course, my own EV blog forum,
sure,
of course, primarily.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm on a couple of others, which I, you know, a couple I visit, you know, daily or every couple of days or something like that. I sort of like have a tab open.
Yeah,
and
right.
People always complain that I leave my tabs open. It's because, you know, it just allows me to go there easily.
Yeah, yeah, you're browsing at that point.
And then I search for new posts. You know, it only takes me, you know, a few seconds. I go to the tab, hit the search for new posts, and it lists all the new posts since I last checked.
Yep.
You know, and then I just scroll through the headers and go, nah. Oh, yeah, that one sounds interesting. I'll go check that out, that thread out, you know. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's just not part of my, like, even, so I, you know, I love Discourse, which is how I run the KiCad forum and then the my Contextual Electronics forum. And I have to turn on mailing list mode or else I won't learn about anything. You know,
yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And, I find, like, Discord and other ones, like, they're just not the same. They just don't operate. They just don't give me the flexibility to operate in the same way.
Asynchronous.
As, you know, a good forum does, you know, so.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I guess we're just old, Dave. We're just old.
I don't know.
All the kids in their TikTok. Like
efficiency. And yeah, I just watched a video the other day about how huge TikTok is. I had no idea. I mean, holy crap.
I still sometimes watch, what was that 6-second video site that was, it used to be Vine.
Oh,
Vine.co.
Oh, Vine. Oh, Vine. Man. Didn't that die?
It did die. It got like bought
right.
and then like absorbed.
Yeah,
but
right.
there's still like compilations on YouTube. And like,
oh, okay.
The thing I love yep. about those services, like, you know, I'm never going to be on them. I just, you know, whatever. You know, they're like very memey and whatever, but like, there's like some really funny people, you know, like they're creative and funny and it's in short bursts and like, it's a huge waste of time, but like, you know, people are humans and, you know, so I hear you, you young folks, you know.
They want to be entertained,
yeah,
you
that's
know,
right.
by
yeah.
mindless
right.
drivel, you know.
By one another, and that's great, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm not against it, I just, you know, I just can't operate like that, unfortunately. I feel...
I've got a segue.
Yeah,
I've
yeah,
got a good
do
segue.
It, go for it.
As from, what is it, 7 seconds, you know, or 20 second, you
yeah,
know,
20
just
seconds
drivel,
on TikTok, I think, yeah.
Drivel to the most highly produced content
oh,
I've ever seen
yes.
behind Captain Disillusion. I mean, this is Captain Disillusion level content production.
Okay, keep going. I know what you're talking
yep.
about now. Okay.
Yep, yep. This is... YouTube channel. I don't know how long it's been. I think it's been going for a year or something. But anyway, Teddy is the guy who runs it. I won't say his last name because I don't know if he's fully out yet in terms of his, you know,
yes.
his last name and stuff. Anyway, Teddy for the channel Branch Education on YouTube. We'll link it in down below. And he just did a video on how do PCBs work. And it's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
He actually emailed me about this. I've been talking to him. And I said, you know, holy shit, this is fantastic. It's the most highly produced content I've ever seen in my life. And it's basically, I'll explain what it is. It's a 10-minute video explaining how PCBs work. He uses a mobile phone and smartphone as an example. And he literally... Like, he takes it apart, he photographs it, animates it, he even desoldered each individual component and animated those, and he x-rayed the boards, and it's just this marvelous
yeah.
3D animated info thing of how PCBs are put together and how the traces, you know, and he, like, the animation's just brilliant. Just go and watch it.
It's really good.
And,
yes, and like bookmark it to send to other people when like, you're at the Christmas holidays and your grandparents are like, wait, what did you do again? Just send them that video.
And just send them that video and say, I work on stuff like this.
Yeah,
this
right.
is what I do. I
right.
do PCBs.
Yeah, because it's
know?
Engaging
and,
too, and it's interesting,
and,
like, how it's
engaging
together.
And it's so highly polished content. And I told him that... I said, look, I'd be stunned if this was less than 50 hours work to actually produce this one 10-minute video. And he went, yeah, you're not wrong. It was 130 hours.
Oh, my God.
of work to produce the one video.
That's crazy.
Like, it's just not. Sorry, 115 hours. His average video takes about 90 hours work to actually produce.
Whew.
This is, like, it's just phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Just, does he have kids?
oh, back to I don't know. I don't know, but oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know.
That's crazy.
Well
no,
done,
that's
Teddy.
Great.
It's
that's
just,
great.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, go and subscribe to Branch Engineering.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, fantastic. He's like, he's got like how cameras work and stuff like that. And I was mentioning this the other day, like, you know, the young, you know, the kiddies out there, right? What are they watching? TikTok. Well, last night with Sagan, I was watching this video, How Do PCBs Work? Sagan
oh, yeah.
loved it.
Oh, really?
You know,
great.
It's really educational.
He's
oh,
got the
he's
knack,
into
Dave. He's got the knack.
These, yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Science, yep. Have to, yep. the you know, doctor's office, the knee
That's
tapping.
Right. Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
He's got the knack.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Dilbert.
And, yeah, it's brilliant. And his other ones, he's getting more polished. As he goes, because his ones from like a year ago aren't quite as polished. Still absolutely brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this new one has just stepped it up a level. Wow. To go to the effort to desolder every single component and then x-ray and then photograph them properly and then 3D animate them.
Yeah.
Is just insane.
Yep.
Wow. Whereas me, my slap together videos, you know.
You've been traveling. I know you traveled previously, but you went to the that airplane simulator. That thing was
I traveled,
awesome.
I jumped in my car and drove for 45 minutes. Yep.
Oh, I thought it was out of town. Okay, so it was just
No. It's on the other side of Sydney. And if you know, you've kind of driven from one side of Sydney the other, and it's not pleasant.
Yeah.
It's not great getting from one side to the other.
Yeah, it's so, big city
anyway,
stuff. Chicago
it's,
too.
It's
is like
here
that.
In Sydney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
LA, you know, places.
Yeah.
Like that.
Right. Right. Sprawly kind of things. Yeah.
And if you go doing peak, if you go during peak hour, you are screwed.
That's right.
Like,
yes.
Just,
yeah. Well, that's what you know. I'm sure that some of our listeners right now are in their car, honking their horns at the traffic.
Exactly.
No, that's great though. Like that. I mean, like just the amount of connections that they're dealing with. I was skipping through a little bit of this simulator video, and
I recommend. Yeah.
There's a couple videos too. So there's one EV Discover video, and then two. Simulator videos
on the main channel. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
One's just talking about the hardware, the IO hardware solution that he developed to interface with the real 747
right.
Cockpit, all the controls and actuators and you know things on there.
I wish we could talk to someone who's like at Boeing and like hearing like because I remember the one thing that the guy was talking about was like how the wiper blades have like special engineering and stuff like that, but just like understanding what the teams look like. Like, so how many people are on a team that do the windshield wipers for a aircraft like that? And
there'd be half a dozen people on a team that just do the windscreen wipers, you know?
And like they're carrying years and years and years of, you know, technical load with them too, right? That 747's been made for, I don't know,
it was
they're
made
not
in the
making
50s.
It anymore, right? They're done making them, but
no, they're still. They're still making a variant of it.
Okay.
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. But
which is nuts, and it's still the same, basically the same airframe as the 1950s.
Yeah,
late 60s or whatever.
Yeah, that was later than that. Yeah, but it's the queen of the skies, whatever. I think United called it that, and it's just it's amazing longevity. But like you know, there's been you know probably tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of engineers that are like worked on it over its lifespan. You know. Because there's also maintenance and maintaining engineering and stuff like that. And and now he's taking it on, trying like interface with all this stuff. It's like, ooh, yeah, powers teams, you know, like there's a lot of money bundled in there too.
Oh, there's a ton of money, ton of time. I mean, it takes years and years to develop something like this. You know, they've been working on it for years. Yeah. And
drawings,
and then they'll
oh
be
God,
refining
all the
it for years.
Wire harnesses and like, oh God. Yeah, testing and just looking
That's just to interface it to the flight simulator software.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they have to get the flight simulator software guy who writes that to add all these functions which it never had before.
Yeah.
You know, we need this, you know, windscreen wiper bulb to come on when we flip the he's got to modify his flight simulator software to do that.
Yeah, one bit of software difference, right?
Exactly. But still, you know, it has to be added.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's nuts.
Yeah.
And he was telling me how, it's in the video too, how one guy has been writing this 747 simulator software for like 20 years.
Yep.
Yeah. It's just nuts.
That's a dedication to your craft, I'd say, you know?
Yep. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, I've been in firmware mode lately, and it's been a fun reintroduction into that space.
Why? What's failed?
Oh, just
my spidey sense tells me you've come a gutzer.
Not a gutzer, but like you know, I've you know, just been writing. I've been doing a lot of like onesie twosie type stuff in the past, and now this is like no. I'm like writing drivers, and you know, sitting down and like writing firmware for days at a time is kind of new,
right?
And different, not new, but different for me. I haven't done it in a while, and you know, exploring new chipsets and like, you know, when that like you really get to know a data sheet or a reference manual, I guess. I'm like halfway there.
Got it. And it's all in plain vanilla C?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a little.
Using the vendor tools as opposed to my video, my hour long video that I did with David. Did we talk about that last time?
I don't think we did. Yeah, that came out right after we had talked, I think. So that was on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Because
so
we had talked about it. We had talked about the Great Scott video about USB-C, or maybe it was around the same time.
Yeah, no, we talked about USB power delivery, but we didn't talk about the actual video of us setting up the software development system.
Oh, yeah, back and forth, back and forth.
It's an hour-long video of, and the comments, wow.
Yeah.
It's, and the video got spread around to many different community, like the software community and stuff like that, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone's just rolling their eyes and, you know, yep.
What about it?
Some people understand the reasoning. Well, basically, right, it's an hour-long video for those who haven't seen it. It's us setting up Windows, on my Windows machine here,
yeah, yeah.
Setting up all of the development tools required to write and to do the firmware, to compile the firmware for my new micro supply project. So it's a power supply,
yeah.
Right? It's a power supply with a micro. Okay, it's got two micros, and yes, it's got USB power delivery and all that sort of blah, blah. But really, it's just an ST ARM micro. That's it.
Right.
So ordinarily, you would just, most people, including myself, would just download the ST ARM Cube software.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
what they call their development software. And that's it,
yep.
Right? That's all you need. And then you just use plain vanilla C, and it comes with the GCC compiler already. Everything's just set up. You just install that, and you start typing your C code, and you compile, and it works. Right?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes. Well, yeah. You know, that's the, right. If the vendor tools don't do that, then you shouldn't be using their chips, right? Quite frankly.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
If their tools suck that bad, you probably shouldn't be using
them. I have like a discount factor for like, so yes, I agree. If you're doing it on Windows, yes, it should just install and work. If you're like, hey, I should use the IDE in Linux. I'll give you a couple extra hours. You know, is it
well,
their problem?
The
Am I the problem?
Right?
Yeah, you know. Like,
everyone
yeah.
else complained that all this shit that we did in an hour, installing Ninja and Doxygen and all sorts of different things
sure.
that we installed,
yeah.
right, to make this thing work, and Microsoft Visual Studio Code and all
yeah,
that sort
yeah.
of jazz, right, and all the plugins for that. There were like half a dozen different things we
oh,
had
yeah,
to install.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone said, oh, I could have done that in a minute on Linux.
I disagree with
right?
that. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that's what everyone's saying. Holy shit, it's Windows's problem. You know, it's a problem with Windows. And but it's not just that, you know. There's no different. Like, don't worry about the difference between Windows and Linux here. That's not
yeah.
what I'm getting
yeah,
at.
No,
what I'm
I
getting
don't.
At is the complexity of the software environment. Because David actually started using the ST ARM Cube software, but I think he changed because he was having, because he writes in C++, right? And he does everything like really high-end software.
Yeah.
Even for a little power supply, he's going to do the software as if it's
Let's just say he gilds the lily, yeah.
he gilds the lily, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, right? It's as he's, because this is a guy that writes game engines for in his spare time,
sure.
right? I mean, you know, right? He's a serious software dude, right? So that's just what he's used to doing. And
right.
so it's all written in C++, and it all uses the proper classes and everything else. And it all, you know, so he's got this convoluted, which to me and to maybe a general firmware engineer out there is like a really convoluted software environment to get this thing working.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to any real firmware engineer, I guess, who, you know.
Yeah,
probably
I think,
has a similar
yeah,
system,
yeah.
but anyway, yeah, it just he was finding bugs in this GCC compiler and stuff like that because he was pushing it so far using all this exotic C++ stuff, right? That he was finding, you know, all these issues that he went, oh, bugger this, I'm going back to what I know, which is, you know, the proper, you know, GCC on its own plus Microsoft Visual Studio Code plus Ninja plugin and all these make
right,
plugins
right.
to generate all these make files and build all this, you know, this complex build environment and stuff like that. And that's what he's used to. So to him, it's trivial. But to someone else watching that video, it's like, oh,
yeah.
you know, you
well,
roll your eyes and
I
go,
I think that's a good point,
wow.
though. Like, so like even what you're just saying, like you know, because of David's workflow, you guys moved outside of what like an ST expects and what I think a lot of the viewers expect. And like at that point, you're kind of out in the wide open, you know, like you're on your own, you know, like it, and there are some benefits to that sometimes, but sometimes there's also pitfalls and,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like you can go on the ST ARM forum and going, oh, look, it's failing,
mm-hmm.
you know, help us please.
Right.
ST.
Right.
It's like, no, they're going to throw their arms up when you're using your own,
right.
you know,
right.
Build
so some of the stuff I've been doing, when I was doing the, I guess I'm still kind of do a little bit, but the STM32 stuff I had been doing, the F0, I was being just using like I was in a very similar mode to David where I was like, I don't want to use just like the off the shelf stuff. I didn't want to use the IDE. I wanted to learn, you know, how to use GCC. I wanted to, you know, use GDB and GDB server and stuff like that. And
why? What was the drive behind that?
So the drive behind that was, one, I wanted to, you know, this use this chip that I was using. But the other thing is, like, having some knowledge under the hood. A lot of people told me, oh, just use the IDE, which I totally agree is the right solution. And if I was doing it for work, would be the solution. But I always call it like the 2 a.m. problem. What happens when it's 2 a.m. and something's not working, and I'm like, okay, I'll just go look the next level down under the hood, and like, and I'm just like, I have no idea what's going on here, you know? Because when you, so then I started learning how GCC was working. You know, I was like, oh, okay, well, GCC is a program. You know, it's like basically like an executable. Obviously, it's not, but it's like, you know, it's basically I'm passing a file to this program, and then it's using that to then parse all the software that I've written and links it all together, and then it creates an output file. And like, basically it's just seeing how everything's put together under the hood, so that I, when I then click a button in you know, Visual Studio Code,
you know what it's doing. You know it's running this command line. It's actually calling this up with all these parameter options. And I found that handy in the past, but it's, but often, like, especially the problems David ran into, it's like way deeper than that. It's like bugs in GCC.
But I'm not going to assume, like, that's normally really, the case, right?
You know, if that's not something you can fix. Exactly. So I
think that that's a special case. I don't think that's not even why I was doing it. Like, I just wanted to do this as a learning thing, because like, at the end of the day, I'm on my own. You know, like, that's really what it comes down to. Like,
you can actually see that stuff, right? You can actually see that stuff. Usually it's in the build window in, I haven't used the STM Cube software, there's a console stuff where you can see it actually running the command line. It calls up GCC, and then it includes all of these dash parameters.
There's like flags.
So it's there. So that's really, I don't think you actually need to go and install and build all these things separately to get that benefit of peeping under the hood, so to speak.
I totally agree. It might not be good for other people, but for me, it was very beneficial. Okay. And it was a confidence thing too. You know, it was like, I want to know how this happens so that then, you know, so like, what I always think about too with like IDEs, specifically Eclipse, when I think about like the, you know, you right click on a project, you go to properties, and then it's just like tabs on tabs on tabs of like, GCC compiler, let's look at all the options. And then it's like 16 more tabs, and it's like, what the hell is all this stuff? You know, and like, just getting a little bit of, you know, I'm not going to know what everything does, and I don't need to know what everything does. Usually the default's fine, but I would be watching these tutorial videos on YouTube, and like, they would sometimes even speed it up, and they'd just be like, oh yeah, I'm just going to like change the settings. Click, 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 click. What did you just do? Like, if I have one thing wrong, it's not going to work. You know, like, I need, so I'm like slowing it down to like, you know, 4 frames a second to try and watch this thing, you know? And it's like,
that's great.
And so like, having that, again, that a little bit of that confidence, it really helped me. It might not, there was a lot of struggle in there too, but now I kind of, I don't know, it helped a lot. I'll do a callback too. So when Jason Kreidner and Robert Nelson were on the show, the BeagleBoard guys, Robert's at DigiKey, but he works on a lot of the compilation stuff. You can actually hear me mid-episode, kind of like the light bulb comes on. Because like, and this is not like a long time ago. This is like 3 or 4 years ago, you know? And it was just something about like, I had never really understood how compilers were working and how Linux was built and like a lot of that stuff. And so I don't know, like I remember specifically recording with them and just being like, holy crap, I don't get any of this stuff. And that kind of started me down this path. And like, you know, it's important to know, you need to know what's going on. And you know, like, you know, and you and I have gone back and forth too. You know, we've talked about like, oh, do you need to know all of the computer architecture that's happening underneath the hood? Well, maybe not all of it, but you know, I've come more back towards the knowing some of it sure as hell helps. You know, you don't need to know how an ALU works on every single instruction cycle, but you know, knowing that there is an ALU and knowing what memory is and how it's all put together. Like, yeah, that stuff, that has been impacting me every single day since I've been doing firmware stuff. And it's part of my job now, you know, so that's, it's important. It's important stuff. And you know, I can, like, I don't know, like I said before, I don't have anyone I can go to otherwise. Like, I can pay someone else, or I can, you know, beg and steal and borrow. And you know, there's some very from very nice people on you know, the forums and the Twitter and similar stuff, and I'm very appreciative to all of them. But when it's 2 a.m. and everyone's asleep, what do I do? You know, like, and I need to be mm-hmm. self-reliant, I guess, at least in most places.
Murphy's going to ensure that.
Exactly.
That the fault that you're going to have yeah. is just beyond your knowledge base.
Yeah, exactly.
Regardless of how much you yeah. delve under the hood. Yeah.
And I've talked about it, I think, on here yep. before, but I'm a thrasher, right? So, and when something goes wrong, I'm like, oh, I'll change everything. And I'm trying to get better at this, but like, you know, being like measured and using GitHub and like, you know, tracking changes, running small experiments, like this is all stuff that I'm trying to get better at. Just because.
Yeah, no, I will thrash. Like, if, you know, I've had compiler issues in the past and I will literally just like, I'll rewrite things until
yeah,
it right. works.
Yeah.
You know, until I avoid that issue and I go, right, I'm not going to investigate why it failed because, quite frankly, I don't have the time.
Yeah.
You know, I just got to
right.
get
you
on
just
with
gotta
it.
Try stuff, right? So, that is
yeah,
almost,
I'm just going to try stuff until it works.
Almost never yeah. the right option, right? But it happens.
Well, yeah, but I've found it's actually a very productive way to go because in most instances, I've been able to get around the problem.
Yeah.
I've been able to get around it and get back onto work. And get back onto finishing the project.
I mean,
and sometimes if you're on a time constrained project,
yeah.
you can't spend the time to understand the problem.
No, oh yeah, okay, yeah, you're right.
I'm not saying it's a good thing, but sometimes you just do not have the time to understand it properly. You sure. just need a workaround.
Yes, no, I
and
agree
that's
with
it.
That.
Get on with the job.
I'm saying that most of the times when I do, and this might be that your experience has allowed you to thrash a little bit more effectively than me. But like when I'm right. thrashing, I break stuff. You know what I mean? Like
right. Okay. No, yeah. I usually yeah. don't. I, you know, I'm rewriting it in a different way or I'm,
oh,
you know,
I
suspect that this thing may be, you know, and sometimes it's obvious, like you'll add some routine or something like that. And then all of a sudden something doesn't work.
Yeah.
And you go, oh geez. Okay. Well, I don't know why.
Yeah.
So I'll write it a different way. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, and it just magically works. So.
Oh yep. yeah. Okay. That's not what thrashing in my mind. Thrashing in my mind is like, oh, I'll change this variable. Nope. Didn't work. I'll change this variable. Nope, didn't work, and I didn't change the last variable
you're talking
back.
Are you talking at the register level when you're trying to get some peripheral on
yeah,
a micro working
yeah, yeah.
or something?
Yeah,
oh
was,
God, no.
Yeah, no,
just read the data sheet. No, it's yeah. you know that's where you
that
don't
is
thrash.
The right, yeah.
That's where you go into the data sheet yeah. and you read. But sometimes the data sheet's wrong.
Yeah, we talked
it's
about that
it's bloody
last time.
Wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and
again,
and
that is the
yeah,
exception.
And you've got to figure that
yeah,
out.
Yeah, that is
right. No, yeah. I have encountered that half a dozen times probably.
Out of how many
data
total
sheet's
times?
Been wrong.
What is a give me a percentage? That's the.
Oh yeah, no, it'd be small percentage. It'd be you know, yeah,
1%.
It'd only be 1%. Yeah, yeah. It'd
that's,
be a small amount
low.
Of time.
That's I think that's the other problem is that like so you know I crowdsource a lot of help and you know people that are suggestions and advice and you know you got to be careful with that of course but people are very generous with their time and their suggestions and stuff like that and. Sometimes it's like you gotta like sometimes people go to the most complicated thing, right? Oh well, maybe it's you know like, just to use the example.
Right,
I'm not saying
course.
This is normally, but like maybe it's the compiler. It's probably not the compiler. You better check off
right,
every
probably.
Single
yeah,
thing
yeah,
on your
exactly.
list. You know, pebcac, and then like 100 down the list, maybe it's the compiler. You know,
and that's it. Did we talk about it? David did a video on that.
Oh yeah.
Like he did a video saying I found another GCC compiler bug and
oh,
then
yes,
within minutes of the upload,
yeah.
you know, dozens of people said, "Nope, it's your code."
Yeah. No, I
you
think
know,
that's natural though too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like once you have
yeah.
this error then you think it's, you know, like we all have these libraries of like debugging and troubleshooting and it's like, "Oh, well, this one time I moved the cable and the cable was, you know, it was something,
yeah.
you know, like that was shorting out or something." But it's like, you know, you got to go through your mental like library of everything that's gone wrong. And you like you suspect it. That I know that's at least how I operate. And sometimes that can throw some red herrings, you know.
See for me, like I don't think I've ever encountered a compiler bug. I don't think.
I wouldn't even
so,
know how
like,
to look. So that's the main
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, no, you know, so like that's not something that I would even consider
yeah.
because I haven't, you know, like yet. Yeah, as you said, like it's almost certainly not the compiler because hundreds of thousands of other people use it,
yeah.
right? So
right,
the
right,
fact
right.
that you found something that,
right.
you know, somebody else like...
I am not special. I am
Yep.
I'm the all singing, all dancing crap of the world, you know, or whatever that is from Fight Club. You know?
But I've encountered this in tons of stuff, you know, not only data sheets and things like that, but, you know, shipping cart software I've talked about before, know. And I found, well, why doesn't it work with this country I'm trying to send, you know, ship to? It's because there's a bug in, well, not a bug in the system, but they haven't added support for that country yet.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's like I'm the first one who's encountered this because I'm the first one who's shipped to the Solomon Islands or something, you know? It's like, it's ridiculous. But, you know, sometimes that does happen.
Yeah. Actually, there was a tweet that I saw last week. It says, note to self, try a different USB-C cable before spending hours looking for why the board doesn't enumerate. That was Conrad right. Beckman. Like, same kind of thing, you know, like, it's probably, right. you know, like the cable is a very common thing. The power not being on, very common, you know, like, and it's hard to, like, you and I have talked about, like, lists and similar things like that before. Even having a list, like a perfect checklist, it's, you know, it's just some of it's, you can't, you know, you can't list every potential issue. Or if you did, it would take hours and hours to.
Oh, it's not, it's just not possible. Yeah. There's so many permutations.
Yeah. AI, Dave, that's what it's we nuts. Need. We need AI.
Oh, God. No, and we don't. Well, I don't know. Quite a few people have emailed me about this. I know where you segue into.
Yeah. Oh, about the.
Did you intend to segue?
Soft intention. Yeah.
Is that a soft segue? There's a new deep learning artificial intelligence, PCB routing AI software, which, well, is nothing new because people have been talking about, oh, our new thing does AI and all that sort of stuff 30 years ago. I don't know, you upload your I think it only supports KiCad, does it? I'm not sure what file format it supports.
So it uses
what's the name of it?
DeepPCB.
DeepPCB.com is it or?
Yeah. AI.
DeepPCB.ai,
yeah, it's an extension.
And you can upload your KiCad file and it'll magically auto route it for you. Yeah, well, everyone's been saying that for 30 years. So,
right. I think it's more like three layout engineers in a trench coat kind of thing.
Right. So you think secretly behind
there
there's
three. I was suggesting this idea, but of course, like, why wouldn't you just have it? First off, it says 24 hours, right? If you're going to have a layout tool, it's not going to take 24 hours to do this kind of thing. So it's just. This is probably just someone who's floating an idea and then, oh, yeah, people like this. I'll go develop it when it's done.
No. Look, I've used auto routers in the professional field.
That's right.
Actually, in anger, and they have been useful. But in my experience and the experience of most people who have used them is that, like, on a complex board where it's worth using them on, as you said, like just a regular board, you could lay it out in a day. So what's the point uploading it to a thing, right? Any decent, simple Arduino-y size board you can lay out in a day. It's not a problem. Or hours, right?
Right.
So, you know, it's not. And then you're going to have to tweak it anyway.
Right. Yep.
Like, you're going to have to tweak things anyway. Right. It's not like it's just going to be
complexity.
Done.
Like, if you go up in complexity, you should either be doing it yourself or, you know, maybe hiring someone else might do it. But
when you go up in complexity, this is where auto routers become really useful. But you have to, it takes more time to set up constrain the auto router. You can't just go auto route the entire board. Right. I've got this 10-layer motherboard.
Yeah, right.
This 10-layer PC motherboard or 12, you know, 15-layer motherboard or whatever, 16. And you can't just go bam and it's done, right? This is ridiculous. This is not how auto routers work. They're designed for specific. You spend more time setting it up than actually running the auto router.
Right. Well, so last week last week we had Craig on, and Craig works on auto routers, and you know, so like he was a very good and strong case, I think, for him. And the thing that he talked about in the future, which I am totally into, is like, you know, a kind of joint model where you're going to run a simulation, you might tweak a little bit, or you run an auto route, you tweak the parameters. It's more interactive and kind of you know, iterative, really. I think. Someone else had brought this up, and they're like, yeah, well, the same, I think it was in person too, I forget who it was, but they said, you know, people were saying this 20, 30 years ago about compilers too. Oh, I can always write, I can write assembly better than the compiler can do. So I'm just going to use assembly forever. Mm-hmm. Well, they were wrong. And of course, you know, like I sell a t-shirt to never trust the auto router. I'm going to trust an auto router at some point. Like it's on the way. It's just not there yet. And it's, you know, maybe this AI type thing is part of it, but probably more like what Craig was talking about. And, you know, the iterative and generative design type stuff is what we're going to start playing with. And as soon as in KiCad, I might try it out.
Yeah, I might try and do a video trying it out. I'll get some advanced board. I'll pull some open source board from somewhere.
Yep.
And
shuffle it up and upload. See it. Yeah. See what happens.
Yep.
Yeah.
See what happens.
That's great. I mean, I'm not closed off to it, but I don't think this is it.
Yep.
I don't think this is the answer. But there's probably a similar answer.
Everyone claims their one's the best and it's magic. And I've been hearing this shit for 30 years.
Yeah,
Yep. And everyone, but this is a new marketing thing to some people. Some people have not. There's now an auto router that uses artificial intelligence. Oh my goodness, it's going to work magically.
The new AI auto router just adds salt. Add salt liberally to all opinions about it.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Speaking of opinions.
Well, you don't have any of those.
No.
Yeah.
No.
What's up?
I'm about to give one. Okay. After this, I'm going to start recording a video. A often requested video. It's not going to be as broad as, because it can't possibly be as some people are hoping for, but it will be a textbook review.
Oh, interesting.
As in electronics textbook review. So I'm going to do a shootout between four different electronics textbooks.
That's a great
idea.
And
give my opinion.
Yeah.
The problem is that there is, everyone keeps, every week I get an email from a beginner. Which textbook do you recommend? Yeah. Which one's the best? It's like, there's no such thing.
There is no such thing, but I have a one that I've stopped recommending, and I usually try and go
why
against
would you
it.
Recommend one
I don't think
stop?
The Art of Electronics is the right starting textbook.
No, it is not. No, of course not. No,
but that
you've always been in error if you've been recommending that as a starting textbook.
Yeah,
it's a reference textbook. In fact, I just last night I read the intro to the Art of Electronics Edition 3, and they say, no, it's not a textbook, and no, it's not a reference manual, but it's both.
Yeah, it's something in between.
It's quasi in between. And in my hot little hands right now, I have the new X chapters. It's unreleased. I actually have it.
Nice.
It's got publishing date 2020. It's not 2020 yet, but I have one.
It's not in Australia. So, I know it's always 2020 there sooner. So
it does pay to know people. I've got it. And the X chapters, it is real. It does exist. So you can pre-order on Amazon.
What's the difference? And, I don't know what the X chapters are.
Oh, the X chapters is more advanced stuff that they couldn't put in, more in-depth practical stuff that they couldn't fit into the already 1200 page Art of Electronics. Okay. Right.
Oh, so it's not the workbook. It's actually like added chapters.
Oh no. Okay. This is like expanded chapters. So like chapter one is real world passive components.
Ah.
Right. So they talk about PCB trace resistance, current carrying capacity, capacitance, transmission line impedance, cable configuration, skin effect of cables, temperature coefficients of resistors and how self inductance, self capacitance of resistors, all that practical stuff.
Well, no, so that's a great example. So skin effect, right? That is a super important topic to talk about, but man, when do you bring it up? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, you wouldn't tell that to a beginner. You'd be like, and I know that is not targeted at a beginner, but everything that's in every textbook, it's so hard to think about where you actually start. And definitely not the Art of Electronics, because it's more of a compendium and it's like trying to review all these different things. But
It's a nice reference book. Anyone who's into electronics design should have the Art of Electronics.
Sure. Yes, right? I totally agree.
It is not a beginning text.
Right. But the other problem is that the textbooks then, right? So not the Art of Electronics, but then the textbooks, and they're like, let's talk about Ohm's law. And it's like, okay, yeah. But then it's math. Let's talk about math. We definitely want to do lots and lots of math, because the people that are writing textbooks are professors. And it's like, all right, kind of fine. But like, then it's dryness and it's about resistors for a chapter. And Dave, there's got to be a better way, man. Like, I don't know what it is.
Well, this is the interesting thing, right? The four books that I'm reviewing are 1,000-page textbooks, right? They're industry standard textbooks, popular textbooks that are in university classes,
sure,
and stuff like that. But none of them have anything about resistors, capacitors, and stuff like that. That's assumed knowledge. These are basically textbooks, which I'll cop a lot of flack over this because there's nothing that covers everything as far as I'm aware.
Right.
Like every aspect, there's nothing that covers the whole blinking lot from go to woe. There's not these ones focus on actual devices. So diodes and above. So diodes, transistors, op amps, filters, all the practical circuit elements, but they completely skip all of your passive, don't tell you what voltage is. They don't tell you what current is. Yeah, they don't tell you resistors and capacitors. They might have like a couple of pages right at the start for tokenism, right? But it's not that. It's not going to tell you about, DC superposition theorem. It's not going to talk about, complex numbers and AC impedance. And, it's not going to go into all that sort of stuff, right? It's not going to go into all your AC theory and all that sort of stuff. It's certainly not going to go into control theory and things like that.
So like even a KCL, KVL, like that's skipping those too?
No, I don't even think they're in there.
Really?
No.
What level of books are these?
Yeah.
These are like graduate books?
These are university reference textbooks. I'm talking Floyd, Malvino, Smith, right? All of the major books you'd get in almost any university electronics course.
Mine
it's
sucks.
Because they have a focus.
Yeah.
They have a focus on just the components and circuit topology, and that's it, right? That you want something else. You go buy another book if you want to learn, doing mesh analysis and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. That's the kind of books that I started with mesh analysis and all.
I love that. It's good fun. I've done a video on that.
It's not a bad topic, but it's a bad topic to start with. That's really what I get to.
Right.
You know
what
I mean?
Yeah,
like,
of course.
So like usually when I tell people, I think like the Make Guide to Electronics is like a great place to start. That's usually where I tell people like that kind of thing, Forest MIMS, something project-based, something where it's like get hands-on with no one is surprised by this response from me, but
yes,
get hands-on with a resistor and like, but like, okay, say you only have paper. You only have paper and you definitely are going to be learning in an academic context. Show what a pull-up resistor is before you show what a transistor is. You know what I mean? Like there's some more practical examples that could be in there that show math and like explain why you need these things. And it just feels like a lot of these books don't do it. And I know someone's going to say, oh, Chris, you should write them. I'm not writing a book. No. Dave will write a book first.
No, thanks.
Yeah. But like, I don't know. It's a hard thing to do. So all of you listening who are beginners, we love you. Keep fighting the good fight. Like Dave and I still learn a lot too. It sucks to start somewhere, but just start somewhere, LEDs are usually the place I tell people to start.
Well, that's going to have to be a separate video because this is a video between the shootout between four university textbooks.
How did you source these? Did you get your suggestions?
Oh, well, no. Like, I'm a Floyd man, right? So I learned on Floyd, right? So Floyd's one of the obvious ones, and Smith and Serrata's another one, and Malvino, Right.
So like, and well, that's another thing. I think there's a lot of regionalism and stuff like that too.
Which one did you use?
Dave, I couldn't tell you if you paid me $100 right now. I have no idea. Yeah. I mean, I know the look of it, but I couldn't remember the name.
Right. Okay.
I know a lot of people do Cedra and Smith, but that's on the actual, that's the transistor level, right?
That's the one I'm doing, Cedra and Smith.
Oh, I think you said a different Smith. Okay.
No.
I think it's Smith and someone else. Yep. Okay. Yeah, Cedra and Smith I know that one. You're Floyd, man. Well, I think that's a great topic. It sounds a little drier at first, but I think that
Oh, it's going to be a completely dry and boring video, yeah.
I mean, but I think that talking about like what is first, because it's hard like when you're a beginner too, thinking about like what you're presented with, you're coming to this field that is everything from iPhones to a 5mm LED that you're holding in your hand, and it's like...
Oh, it's insanely expensive. Yeah. I've been doing it for 40 plus years and there's more things I don't know than things I do know.
Right, yep.
Orders of magnitude, more things I don't know than I do know.
40 years, damn.
That I just haven't encountered before, that I might have heard of in passing, but I don't know jack about.
40 years,
right?
Really?
It's like,
that means you've got 25 years on me. That's crazy. I mean, because I didn't do any electronics as a kid, But
right, right.
Damn. Well, yep. That explains some of it, folks. You know.
Yeah. When I was a boy.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. It's a long time, and there's still, you know, people think, oh, they do the university course and they're going to know everything. Bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, not even close.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not even close. So anyway. Yeah, textbook shootout. But this is not for beginners, so I'm going to cop a lot of flack for that.
Yeah, well,
tough titties. It is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you can always go back. So, collect all the beginner books and then, you know, like, ask people for their recommendations.
I'll have to ask specifically, look, what are the beginner books? Because I don't think you're going to get one that goes from complete beginner, like practical stuff that you're talking about, and then covers all the stuff that a Smith and Sedger or a Floyd covers as well. It's already, you know, 1,000 pages. Each one of these is 1,000 pages, and it just covers diodes, transistors, op amps, filters, you know, and other circuit topology stuff.
Yep.
And it's 1,000 pages just covering these components, right? It's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so you can't possibly, and these are all important stuff.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I should say that
everything
too.
Everything in there is important aspect of electronics.
I'm always like very like, you know, it sounds like I'm very anti-math, but I'm just anti-math at the beginning, you know. And some people like starting with math, you know, they like they think like that, they think in equations, that kind of thing, and like just not me, and that's fine, whatever. But like, damn, it is so necessary, you know, to have a grasp on that and to have, you know, to understand the math from the actual. Mm-hmm. ability to calculate things and stuff like that. But I always like it from the mental models too, you know, like being able to understand derivative relationships and stuff like that. But
no, like you won't find in these textbooks, you will not find Maxwell's equations and all that advanced stuff, right? Same as Art of Electronics. You will not find anything beyond basic math in Art of Electronics and in these books as well. Right? There are no integrals. There's no differential calculus, right? There's none of that stuff, right? Especially, and there's no, you know, advanced physics and, you know, Maxwell type theory, right? It doesn't go into that. This is just, you know, basic circuit level stuff, you know, circuit design level, sort of like abstract circuit design component level and then component level and above. They're not going to go into detail of, you know, there might be like a page or two of like, you know, how, you know, diodes are PN, you know, transistors are, you know, the physical construction, the, you know, the PNP doping and all that sort of stuff, right? All that sort of, you know, but you can get entire textbooks on that.
Right.
Just that aspect.
I took a semiconductor engineering class and it was the physics of semiconductors or something like that.
Yeah,
what is the doping depth level that, you know, as you inject boron into it and blah blah blah. So
all that sort of stuff. You know? And what you're talking about, the practical, you know, the real beginner stuff, here's the pull up resistors and here's, you know, your blinker LED and all that sort of stuff. You can have a 500 page book just doing that and you still won't even get into the stuff that's covered in these 1,000 page books that I'm gonna review here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right? It's just crazy. You can do a 500 page Arduino book.
Yeah. Oh.
If you really wanted to.
Nice.
Right?
Nice.
Just doing all the basics.
Former guest Jeremy Blum.
Yeah. Jeremy Blum. Hasn't he got a new version of it or something?
He does.
And it's being re-released or something. And I don't know how big it is. I don't think it's, you know, it's not 500 pages.
It's like 18-20 projects or something like that. So probably
something like that.
Pages.
It takes you through projects and you know.
And there's a jacket quote from yours truly on there. So.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yep.
All right.
Me and,
there you go.
Me and Bree Pettis. I didn't know that. I just looked at it.
So the three of us, is it? I have got quotes on the back.
You do not have a quote on there. No, it's me.
Oh, sorry.
So I said yours truly. You know, that's yours.
Oh, sorry.
Yours truly.
Right. You know, I thought you were referring. Yeah. Yes.
For me and Alicia Gibb, who's,
Right.
Yeah. And then Bree Pettis.
Got it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That's why I don't remember doing it.
That's right. Yeah.
That, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, that's all we got time for this week.
Yeah. Everything else, people can sign up for our mailing list or IRC channel or Discord or Discourse or Slack or what else we got? BB.
Are we going to do something analyzing the results from our survey?
Oh, yeah. I sent those. Yeah, I'll have to send those to you again. But yes, we do have. We have some.
Well, I've got the survey results, but there's no like graphs.
Oh, there's graphs
stuff,
if you click on a button. There's some great. There's actually no. This is an interesting one, real quick. Let me send you the link. So what's interesting about it this year is I asked a different question, which was how long have you been working on electronics, and then how long have you worked on them professionally? I think that's what the question was.
Right.
That was a new question this year. And
that is a good one. Yep.
Basically what it, or, and there was a selection on professionally where it was, I have never made any money from electronics. So what that does is that shows how many people are true hobbyists, even though some of them have been, I haven't diced up all the data yet, but if you look at that, you can basically see who's a hobbyist and, you know, has never made any money, but some of them have been working on electronics for like 35, 40 years, which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
You know? And, let me see if I can send this to Dave real quick. I don't know if that's going to work. But yeah, we'll post all the results. We have a lot of people. Let's see. So who started listening to Amp Hour in
20? Link doesn't work. Resource unavailable.
Okay.
Oh, well, doesn't matter.
Yeah. So some of you in 2010, 7.4% of you started listening in 2010. So that's pretty good. And so we, you know, so we track age groups. We track where you live, interest in electronics, working on electronics. Where you listen to the electronics, 38% of you are in the car right now. 21% of you are walking. 8.6% of you are in the lab.
One question that wasn't in there, and this was brought up on the forum, is what's your favorite episode?
Oh, that is a good question. Damn.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, well.
Yep. Didn't put it in.
Oh, well.
Yep.
We'll do this again in 2020.
It was an excellent question.
Yeah, that is definitely, that's a great question. To put in there
to see if it gravitates and like see if there's like a top five or something, you know.
Right. What is your favorite episode? The next one.
I did enjoy Chuck Peddle.
Yeah, that would be on my list.
Yep. That's, you know,
it was a solo interview, but Tom Lee, and it's very recent too. Tom is one of my, definitely one of my recent favorites. We have had so many great guests. And if people are looking to recommend the show to other people, I usually tell them to recommend the guest episodes first. You know, it's fun to listen to me and Dave banter about books for 20 minutes. but yeah, I think that's like, send your favorite guest. If you're going to send someone an Amp Hour episode, you think they might be interested, send them the Chuck Peddle episode, send them the Tom Lieb episode, send them, you know, the Jerry Ellsworth talking
one that's been shared a lot is the myself and Sharia are talking about the 5G stuff. That's a lot. That's been shared a lot.
That's right. Yeah.
People go, wow, you know, because that's really topical stuff.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Like, what the hell is 5G in the first place? And like, you guys go back and forth.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that one was great too. It's always great for me too, because I get to listen to it as like a listener, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And I guess
Whereas the other ones, you know, Chuck Peddle, like, you know, it's great if you're a vintage computer fan, but if you're not, it's like yawn worthy probably.
Well, maybe.
You
know? Yeah. I don't know.
Like,
not
everyone's going to like the same stuff. You know, you can't just say, it's a great episode.
I would always say people should give it a shot though. You never know what you might learn from someone in vintage days as, you know, someone who's doing FPGA stuff,
but,
you know, like,
you know. But you can't expect everyone's going to like it. So,
100%. You know. I I know that one. Yeah. So, David, did you get the link I sent?
Yeah, but it doesn't work.
Oh, it still doesn't work. Okay. Yeah. Probably because I...
Oh, is there a second link?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Got it.
Okay.
No, it's the actual form.
Oh, okay.
It's the form itself.
All right. Well, I'll have to send it to you later.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah. Doesn't matter. I'm looking at the survey results now.
Anyways, thank you to everyone who does that. I will be sending out the winners' gifts before the end of the year, so that'll be some of my things calming down at the end of the year. So we'll be sending out Amp Hour notebooks and EV
that
blog
can be your hobby.
There you go. Yeah, shipping stuff is my hobby. It's very rewarding, you know. Me and the USPS guy are tight, you know.
Yeah, right. That brown shirt really does it for you.
That's UPS. That's UPS, Dave. USPS
that's
is blue and light blue and blue and dark blue.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. If people, you know, thank you for everyone who did the survey. If we always forget to ask about iTunes reviews. We haven't asked for that in a while. If you're feeling generous, head on over
there. iTunes is still a thing.
It's still a thing. Yeah. And it helps. It still helps like keep in the rating. So I don't know if we actually are, but.
I don't have any of these fruity gadgets, so.
Well, iTunes is still the main repository for all podcasts, so, which is, you know, like it or hate it, it's true. We love iTunes.
But we've got every episode on our server.
That's true. Yeah, it's on Libsyn, but iTunes is the pointer to all other servers, right? So like, and because iTunes is like the first repository, because the most people use it, it becomes the de facto. And so same thing with like reviews. because it's the biggest center for all podcasts, then the reviews that are on there, you know, are going to, if you move up in the charts there, then it reaches the most new people, blah, 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 blah. So that's insider baseball crap, you know, but,
okay.
All right. Well, that's all from us. Thanks again to everyone who did the survey though. It's great stuff. And, we'll catch you next week. Yeah.
Catch you next time.
See ya.